Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latov Recovery Center in downtown Moscow. The Recovery Center is located at 531 South Main Street here in Moscow, and you can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at LatovRecoveryCenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at LatovRecoveryCenter.org and on Facebook. And Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said before, I am Radio Johnny, and I am here with my guest, Eddie P., in the tiny conference room somewhere in the back of the Recovery Center. And for as far as the calendar goes, I'm going to skip that this week, but you know, we always have AA meetings here at noon, NA meetings at 7 o'clock. I think AA is every day except Wednesday. And NA is every day, Monday through Sunday. So if you're looking for one of those meetings, great. If you're looking for a bunch of the other cool offerings we have here, just go to the LatovRecoveryCenter.org website and click on the calendar tab, and it'll list out all the cool stuff that's happening here. So today, like I said, in the studio, I have Eddie P. with me, who I've known for a couple of years. Yeah, because he's a newcomer to the area. So welcome, Eddie.
Thank you, Johnny.
Glad to have you here. Why don't we start out with doing a little bit of your personal history before we get into your recovery story.
Okay. My name is Eddie P. I now live in Moscow, Idaho for the last year and a half. I grew up in Southern California in neighborhoods of Los Angeles. I actually went through high school there and moved around quite a bit. Most of it was in California. Worked there, got married, lived there until life got bad for all the choices that I made with drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm. So then you came up to Moscow to be with family, I understand.
Yes. We recently retired, the wife and I, and we have children here, and we have grandchildren. So made sense to be near the children, especially the grandchildren. So it worked out well that we were able to find a nice little home here near town, spend time with our children and grandchildren, which is a blessing.
There you go. I agree. Fantastic. So, Eddie, why don't we go ahead and dive into your recovery story? You know, I've heard bits and pieces of it over time, but let's get it all out there and see what it looks like.
Okay, let's start with this journey of starting at about age 12. I think that's 6th or 7th grade. Mm-hmm. Making wrong choices at that age already. Decided to start drinking, and I just enjoyed it. I had fun. So I continued that all the way through high school. And in high school, I was the guy that would have vodka in my locker. And it became necessary to have vodka in my locker. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way I made it through high school. Somehow I graduated. To graduate the ceremony, the principal gave me an option of attending an AA meeting. I was 17 years old if I wanted to go through that ceremony. So obviously, I thought I was doing a good job of hiding that vodka in my lockers, but I think teachers and principals knew. That's how it started, my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, but again, that was just an introduction, something that was forced upon me.
Right.
So I really gave it, like, you know, no mind. It was just a hurdle that was in my way for one day. And I just continued drinking, got married, had a job, continued working. I was going to school for at Cal State Los Angeles, and I went for 3.5 years, and I couldn't do that last 6 months. Now, where my alcohol was controlling my life. It was either stop drinking or finish school. I chose to stop school.
Yeah.
Because alcohol was more important. And then somewhere along the way, the wife and the kids had another choice. You know, stop drinking or choose the wife and the kids. I joke about it now, but it was an easy choice. It was continue drinking. And then now I'm getting ready to lose jobs because of my alcohol and other things that I'm doing that aren't legal.
Right.
So now I get in a situation where I'm crashing cars. I think I don't know why we call this our drinking careers. I always laugh when I hear that. But I totaled 10 cars in that time before I gave up drinking. Got some DUIs, but that didn't stop me. I mean, it stopped me momentarily when I'm locked up.
Right, right. Puts a little hitch in your giddy up.
Yeah. It slows me down. And then getting locked up, losing jobs where you don't have money now. When you get to that point, you know, you start doing things that, again, aren't legal.
Sure.
You know, to get that drink.
Right.
You know, or you take advantage of people.
Sure.
You know, that was always an option.
Right.
You know, and do it without any remorse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, when you're feeding that addiction, I mean, it absolutely takes priority and can feel bad about it or you can rationalize it some other way. I mean, that's what I did.
Yeah. So it was, like I said, so, you know, somewhere along the way, I'm having all these things happen in my life, but I continue to choose to be that lifestyle and everything that goes with it. For a while, I lived in Portland, Oregon, from 78 to 82. But again, I got into the same situation up there. The funny thing is, when you make these, we call them geographics.
Right.
I didn't know what they were then, but it was me. It was just getting my backpack and leaving town.
Sure.
So I made it to Portland, and same thing started happening. I did really want to stop. Eddie P. caught up with Eddie P., you know, or he was there waiting for me. So when I got there, I behaved for a while, got a job, you know, bought a house, did all the stuff, and but it was just a matter of time before what I really wanted to do.
Sure. I had an old friend who used to say, he had this great saying, he goes, no matter where you go, there you are.
Yep. And I, you know, found the same kind of people that I like to hang out with, like to do the things that I do. So somewhere along the way, I got four DUIs up in Portland, and this is 1982. I'm grateful it was back then because I can't even imagine today what that would cause.
Prison time.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, and I did some county time, but then when I got out, didn't have a job, didn't have any place to live. It was time to come back to Los Angeles. So my mom still lived in the LA area, so came back home because I had nowhere else to go. Dear moms are precious. They'll love us no matter what.
Yeah, they'll forgive the worst of worst.
You know, and they're there, which I'm very grateful for. But again, so it, you know, started one more time. You know, got a job in Northridge and found the same kind of people that like to do what I like to do. And it was a matter of time. Now it's 1984, and we often joke about you know either passing out or waking up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm either passing out or waking up, and I'm watching this commercial on TV, and it's talking about, is your life a mess? Is alcohol a problem? Have you lost your job because of alcohol? Do you have family? And I'm answering yes to all these questions,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, and then the 800 number flashes in front of me. And I'm at that moment, I'm feeling that demoralization for that one instant. So I call. First thing they asked me was if I had insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a treatment program.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I hadn't lost my job yet. I was on the edge of losing my union job. So I said, yeah, I have insurance. And they checked it out and they said, yeah, you know, your insurance covers it. We can come and get you. He says, now I'm kind of coming to my senses. So now I'm thinking, well, I'm not ready yet. That pitiful demoralization faded away.
Right.
You know, and maybe because I was waking up or something. So now I told him, though, I said, I'll do this thing in 2 weeks. So I gave myself 2 weeks. I called my boss, told him that I was going to need some time off. I still had the job. Made all the necessary arrangements. Didn't tell anyone that I was going to be doing this. Didn't even tell my mom. And I just. But what my plan was, since I'm going to give up drinking, I'm going to go out with in a bang. You know, my plan was I'm going to party like there's never, you know.
Like never, there's no tomorrow.
There's no tomorrow.
There's not going to be a tomorrow.
So that was the plan. And I did that. My last night I'm drinking a Lowenbrau. And that was 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm driving home. And I remember this promise that I made with God. That if he kept me alive these next 2 weeks, that I would go ahead and follow up and go into this program. So that's what I did. And I graduated that program. It's funny, we say we graduate. Right. From these treatment centers.
How long were you?
It was
in
a 2-week program. Mm-hmm. It was a medically induced. It was a aversion therapy.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like the one.
Or they give you the shot and then say have a drink. And
they give you two shots.
Puke it up.
One shot closes your small intestine, and the other shot is anabuse. Mm-hmm. So then they say drink up.
Yeah.
And so basically, by the time you're done with the program, you don't want to pick up that drink, whatever it was. Again, mine was a beer, Lowenbrau. So, but it was funny. We're having alumni come to this. You know, these people that graduated, they're coming to our 2-week stay, and they're telling us how, you know, it's working in their life. And this one guy, he comes up, and after the counselor leaves, he goes and says, you know, this program didn't really work. I said, what? He goes, yeah, it took me a while, but I can drink again. I can drink again. And I'm thinking, that guy's an alcoholic. Because he forced himself to be able to drink. And I'm thinking, yeah, that guy has problems. Not, you know, I'm not him.
Right,
I'm not like him. There's no way.
That good old terminal uniqueness.
You know, it's not going to be me. Long story short, I graduated and I stayed sober for a whole year. I didn't drink for a whole year. And that was one of the things that I kind of made a promise to myself that I was going to do this thing for a year and see how it went. But that year I was pretty miserable because I was coming to meetings for the first 90 days and I was looking at all the tools that they had to offer for this sobriety thing.
Right. You're talking about AA at this point.
Yeah, at this point, yeah. So I was going to meetings. And that was the other thing. So when we graduated, completed our 2-week program, they gave us an AA book, big book, and a 12-12, and they said, go to meetings. So, you know, that's what we did, and that's what I did. But I stopped going to meetings for a while, after 90 days, but I didn't drink. But I was miserable, because that whole time I wanted to drink. But I said, I'm going to give myself a year. I got that year. I went to an AA meeting that I had never been to before, and I was going to tell them that I got a year, I want the medallion, and see you later.
Mm-hmm.
I went to that meeting in the basement. I didn't say who I was. I didn't say I had a year. And after that serenity prayer, I let go of those hands, and it got worse. It talks about it in the big book. It gets worse.
Yeah.
And for me, that's what had to happen. So now I'm still in Southern California. Got to the point where now I'm losing my job again.
Mm-hmm. You're back drinking. When you say it got worse, you meant?
Yeah, it back to where you were and increased and made everything worse.
Sure.
Just, you know, knowing right from wrong, but I still made all the wrong choices.
Mm-hmm.
And it just continued to get bad. So now I'm losing a job one more time. I have a son in my life that my mom has to remind me that I haven't called or seen him in 6 months or 9 months or whatever it was, and getting kicked out of the apartment. Just everything's falling apart one more time. So now I have to make a choice. This is where my bottom is, the one that keeps me here in these rooms of the 12 steps. Basically, I'm getting ready to lose my job. Again, when my back's against the wall, and I have no choice but to do what I'm going to do, because that's my thinking, as messed up as it was. So now I'm getting ready to, I was a evening manager of a grocery store, and this is 1986, end of 86. My job at night is to make sure the money that we accumulate, and this is 1986, 87, so we still had cash,
right,
and people were paying with checks, and ATMs were barely coming around.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of cash in these drawers.
Right.
And my job at night is to make sure that the cash from the individual checkers gets out of the drawers and makes it upstairs into the safe. You know, I'm somewhat trustworthy,
right?
Because they don't know everything about me yet. So that particular night, I'm going to the register, taking out $500 cash, and signing that I picked it up. The checker signs that she gave it to me. So then my next step is go upstairs, log it into the books, and then drop it into the safe. So I'm doing everything all night long except that last step. I'm not dropping it into the safe because I've already decided that what I'm going to do is I'm going to take as much money as I can and get out of Dodge. So at the end of the night, I'm looking at $13,000 cash in front of me. So when you're desperate, when you got nothing else to live for, $13,000 seems like a lot of money to go somewhere for the rest of your life and just disappear. So I made that choice. We lock up at midnight. There's two guys that are with me. They don't know what's going on in regards to the money. They're just doing their night duties. And I set the alarm. I have all this money. Again, this is 1987, 86, whatever it was. And that's when they had all those pants with the pockets.
Yeah, cargo pants.
Cargo pants. So they had all kinds of pockets. So that's where I put all the cash in my pockets. And I locked up the door. And now, one more time, I'm making it worse. And I know that, but I have no choice. It's something that I have to do. My back's against the wall. So now I'm home at the ex-girlfriend's apartment. She let me in because I owed her some money. I told her I had some money. Now it's the next day. It's 3 o'clock. And at 3 o'clock, Armor always shows up at this grocery store to pick up all that money. So now I got to really get out of Dodge. So I get her to take me to Burbank Airport. I got to go somewhere and live there the rest of my life. So a thought came to my head, Boise, Idaho. I had never been to Boise, Idaho, but it sure sounded far away. And I figured,
some people still think it's far away. From Moscow, Idaho.
And I really, really believe, because if you're like me, you'll believe anything you tell yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that I was going to live in Boise, Idaho the rest of my life with $13,000. That was the plan.
And how old were you at this point, Ed?
30 years old.
30 years old, okay. Yeah, all right.
So that's what my thought process was. Not much thought into this process. No. So now I'm at Burbank, and the one that goes to Boise, Idaho doesn't leave until 7 p.m., but I got to get out of California. But there's one going to Las Vegas. So I told myself, I'll go to Las Vegas, and then from there, I'll go to Boise, Idaho. Long story short, Las Vegas is not a good place to go if you have $13,000 and you have some kind of a gambling addiction.
Uh-oh.
And that only shows up when I'm in Las Vegas. Funny how that works.
Yeah.
So now I'm in Las Vegas and gambling and drinking and everything else. 3 days later, I'm walking the streets of Las Vegas because I have no more money. Now that demoralization, that pitiful feeling inside, one more time.
Kicks in again. Yeah.
One more time. it's hitting me hard. This time it hits me hard. And I got to make a phone call. I have to call and break my mom's heart one more time. You know, by this time they were already at her house looking for me, but she had to hear it from me. And she lived with an alcoholic for 27 years. My dad died an alcoholic death. So one more time I'm breaking this woman's heart, but I don't know what else to do. Like I said, moms will be there for you no matter what.
Right.
You know, and even though I know I don't want to do that, but I got nowhere else to go. So I call her up, tell her what I've done, tell her I want to come home, and I want this thing to stop. I want whatever's going on in my life with alcohol, just stop. So I made it back to L.A. This was in Ventura County, and went to court April 5th, 1987. That's when I started my sentence, and that's my first day of, that's my sober date. And I ended up doing, I was looking at 3 years in penitentiary, and there's a God in my life, and I ended up just doing county time, which is amazing for
right,
felonies.
For a huge felony like that. Yeah,
along with all the other stuff that was tagged along with it. So again, that was just miracles that were working in my life. And I look back at it, and that's what it was. And that was the start of my sobriety. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to get locked up one more time for a longer stay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the beginning of my sobriety.
Well, why don't we take a quick break here, Eddie, listen to a couple of tunes, or a tune, and we'll come back and start talking about how things get better.
Sounds good.
All righty. You're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM, Moscow Pullman. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that little tune. In here talking with Eddie P. about his recovery journey. And we left off with you in jail.
Yeah.
After you had decided that you had what we call in the program a moment of clarity, where you realized that you couldn't just go on, you know, with this felony theft hanging over your head. They talk about the incomprehensible demoralization that happens after, you know, a certain point of time, you know, drinking or using. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they, you know, fall into the same bucket. You know, my first drug was alcohol and my last drug was alcohol, but probably not unlike you, whatever else came along that altered my brain and allowed me to feel okay in my own skin was fine too. So anyway, so you've made this decision, you've faced the circumstances, and you're in jail. Let's kind of fast forward through that time, and you're getting close to getting out. And, you know, like we were talking in the break, it's easier to stay sober in jail. I mean, we all know that stuff's available, but, you know, you're not going to get a regular supply, so you're not going to be able to drink or use like you want to without some consequences. Here you are, Eddie. You're getting ready to get out. What's going to happen next? Where was your thought process at that point?
I was very fortunate. While I was doing my time, a group of AAers came into the jail cells and did 12-step calls.
Mm-hmm.
It's hospitals and institutions.
Yeah, the H&I.
These guys would come in and share how their life has changed because they were fortunate enough to walk into the rooms of AA or any 12-step program, mm-hmm. and their life changed. So I was getting to hear those stories and seeing these people come in with smile on their faces. Talk about a new way of life. And it started to sound pretty good. Well, I had the opportunity to lament on my situation. So as I'm getting ready to get out, now I have to make a choice. I have to decide, is this what I really want and how I go about getting it? So they came in and they would leave literature. And, you know, I'm getting ready to get out and I'm going to go back to my mom's place one more time when I get out of jail, because before you get out, you have to give them an address where you're going to be.
Right.
So
I would imagine you also had some probation.
I had five years probation, mm-hmm. Along with a restitution.
Right.
And so all of this is ready to take place. And I really need to decide the day that I got out. Was I going to go straight back to what I was doing?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, was this time that I got to spend with myself make that decision? So the day that I got out, I got a directory and near my mom's house, and I went to an AA meeting. I knew what was going to happen because I had been to a few before.
Right, right. In 90.
So I kind of knew, you know, the gist of it, you know, the readings, but this time I was prepared to make the right choice.
Oh, you're ready to take some action.
I was ready to reach out. People that I want to walk to these rooms, they stuck out their hand and they're offering me this fellowship. They're offering me phone numbers. They're offering me this friendship. They were offering me a new way of life that they were successful at, and they were willing to share it with me. I needed to take that step. I needed to be in those rooms, particularly that first night, and stand up and identify myself as a newcomer. What I did is, my name's Eddie P. I'm an alcoholic. I take that first step.
Mm-hmm.
And right away, you know, but, you know, that monkey that's on our back, mm-hmm. is actually a gorilla.
Right.
about half of that was gone, that weight, by just making that declaration.
Yep.
You know, that, yeah, I got a problem, and I need to do something about it. And that was the beginning. I did the same thing. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days. I forgot the first time I talked about 90 meetings in 90 days. In Southern California, I did 90 different meetings in 90 days.
Right.
Because it's easy to do in a,
sure,
in a big, big city.
Right. And you don't...
And you don't get to see the same people
twice. There. Yeah.
So this time, I made it... I intentionally went back to the same meeting every single night. Because I really wanted this.
Right.
I really wanted this thing called sobriety. This new way of life. I really wanted to have a smile on my face like everybody that was in these rooms. They really, honestly seemed really happy.
Yeah, I remember going into my first meeting and standing in the parking lot and looking in the windows of these people laughing, talking, smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee. I mean, it looked like a little social event.
Yeah.
You know, it was not what I expected.
No, I could feel something going on in these rooms. You know, it's hard to explain.
Right.
You know, it's just like, it's you know, people ask me how it works. And I said, I don't know how it works, but I believe it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to share that with others. So I started right away. I went to a step study in 12 and 12, a book study, and mostly men's groups.
Mm-hmm.
And found a sponsor right away, a person that's going to guide me through the steps as well as be a friend.
Right. You know? I've actually, it's funny, is when people are talking about sponsors in meetings, I try and make a point of saying to that new guy that's in the room, it's, you know, sponsor's kind of an old phrase. Like in the elite clubs, you had to be sponsored in by somebody who was already a member. In AA, it's really more of a guide. It's a guy who's been there, hacked through them bushes before, knows where the trail is,
right,
how to follow it. And I when I first heard sponsor, I went, oh, what kind of cult am I getting into here? So anyway, I'm sorry. I always think of that. And you even said, you know, somebody who can show you the way.
Yeah, and it was... And I'm grateful that I did that time because I see people coming into these rooms even today and right off the streets, mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know if I could have done that. But my God knew that I couldn't do that. So when I got out, I had some time,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I had an introduction because of the H&I, you know, and I had, you know, so I was blessed to, that was my path.
Right.
To make it into the rooms. And then once I made it, I had to decide, honestly, did I really want to put the work into it? Because there's some work involved.
Right.
Staying sober.
Oh, yeah.
It's just not, I don't want to drink anymore. And click, it happens.
Right. No, it doesn't work like that. Yeah, you got to put in the effort and, you know, follow a few simple 12 suggestions. They actually call it in the book. These are the steps which are suggested as a program of recovery.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, and you really have to just be teachable. Just be willing to give it a try.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I did. I had tried everything else, and it's like when you're looking for your car keys and you find them, do you keep looking? No. Yeah. That would be crazy.
So I got busy in these rooms, you know, working the steps. You know, the hardest ones were not that they're really hard. I mean, you look back, it's a simple program, as we say, and we just make it as difficult as we want to. But doing step 8 and 9. Basically turned it around for me.
Right. Step 8 being we make a list of all the people we had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. And then step 9, we make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. But yeah, that's part of what we call cleaning up our side of the street.
Yeah, and it was important that I did that. And honestly, when you come into these rooms, everybody. Well, I can make amends to my mom. I can make amends to my kids because they're gonna forgive me. It's really simple. Right. But those hard ones are the ones that I think, for me, is the reason why I'm still in these rooms.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make those difficult ones that, you're sitting across the room from someone that you hurt, and all I was there for was just to admit to that person that I was wrong.
Right.
And whatever happens, happens.
Right, right. We admit we were wrong and ask what we can do to right it, if anything.
If anything. And sometimes it's brutal.
Yeah.
But it's kept me here.
Yep.
And so, so then I just started really continue going to meetings. Mm-hmm. I started getting involved in service work like my sponsor did and his sponsor and many of the men that I hang out with. We just got busy, in particular H&I.
Sure.
So now I'm going into jails and prisons and lockdown facilities, particularly it's down in Southern California, youth authorities.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they can hear my story before they really make the wrong choices before they hit 21.
Right.
And that continued to build my confidence in the choices that I'm making about sobriety. Just looking back, that just helped me, made me stronger.
Sure.
And that I'm doing the right thing. And I got, like I said, I stayed busy in these rooms, whatever it was.
Yeah, making coffee, cleaning ashtrays like we did back in the ancient times, and setting up chairs, breaking down tables. I mean, we do it today. It's all in the name of service, and that really comes out in the 12th step, which is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We try to carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic, and then practicing these principles in all our affairs. And, that's where service work comes in. We got to carry the message. Yeah. This, you can't just walk up to somebody who's, going through DTs in the hospital and toss a big book on their lap and say, the answer's in the first 164 pages. Good luck. Because that's, the paper's fine and they can use it to roll cigarettes, but that's about all they're going to do with it. Yeah. We got to carry the message. We got to show them what we did to make a change happen. And also, when people are at a lot of meetings, they ask for, are people celebrating AA anniversaries, 24 hours, 30, 60, 90 days, 6, 9 months, and then annuals. I didn't used to speak up because I thought it was humility that was keeping me from sharing it, because I've got quite a few 24 hours. And somebody told me, they said, no, if you got some time, you need to share so that new person coming in can look at you after hearing your story and go, my story sounds a lot like their story. And they've got, like I've got, 28 years now. Awesome. That's a few 24 hours. You've got even more. You got smart before I did. But It's important. It's important that people are able to see that it can happen. It does work. That's how people have sought me out to sponsor them. We tell people when they come in, listen to the stories, find someone whose story is close to yours, and if they have the sobriety you want, that's your sponsor. Go ask them. I've never said, no, I can't say that. I've said no to one person who asked me to sponsor him, but it was because I was already sponsoring like 5 guys at that particular time. And it would be a disservice, you know,
right,
to that person. But I walked him over and handed him off. I said, okay, this, I know this guy real well. You won't like him at all. He's your new sponsor. And my buddy's like, huh, what? Okay. Because what's the answer in AA, Eddie? Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
It's always yes.
You say yes, no matter what.
That's right.
I mean, there's a possibility that you're not going to be able to do something, but then, you know, you ask them when you can.
Right.
You know. Yeah. The thing about it is, you know, we hear the phrase a lot, you know, we can't keep this if you don't give it away.
Right.
You know, and that hit me hard. I needed to just give this away, as you were saying. You know, we see so many people that need this program.
Mm-hmm.
We're there just to be an example.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, and then they come up to us and, you know, say, hey, you know, how'd you do it?
Right.
And we'll sit down and this is what I did. This is, you know, how the group of men surrounded me and led me this way. It's something that, you know, I enjoy doing.
Right.
You know, I enjoy walking other men through this program.
Sure.
And giving them, you know, what I was given. You know, and then if I can't, there's other men that can.
Right.
And I got to always remember that. There's so many people out there that, you know, that need this program.
Sure.
And they're the ones that want it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot that need it, but we can help the ones that want it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're the ones who will actually, and that's, I think, the first step of, you know, any kind of program of recovery is saying, I need help. Somebody help me, please. And that's kind of what happened to me when I went into that first meeting, kind of through tears. I said, my name's Johnny, I'm an alcoholic, and I need help. I can't live like I've been living anymore. I need help. I don't know how to not drink. I just don't at that point. Because I had lost all choice in the matter. And that's the way it goes. So we're getting close to time here, Eddie, but maybe quickly go over how's life now. Obviously, your kids love you enough to want you around. You moved all the way from sunny Southern California to now snowy Moscow, Idaho, and you're able to be with your kids and your grandchild. And in a couple of weeks, you're going back to L.A.
Back to help out
with another grandchild on the way. And I know you've been helping that child with moving into a new house and getting things going. You sound like a popular guy. What's up with that?
No, life is fantastic. Life is good. I mean, like I said, yeah, you know, my sobriety date is, you know, April 5th, 1987. You know, that's 36 plus years. And somewhere along the way, I was able to keep a job for 30 plus years.
Wow.
And I retired.
Who knew?
That wasn't even a thought in my mind when I was out there. You know, retirement, not even.
Right.
And today, you know, I have the blessings of, you know, having retirement, having enough savings, which, you know,
yeah,
when you were out there, we never saved. I had never had a nickel in my pocket, as we would say.
Right.
You know, and today that's not the case.
Right.
You know, it's just retirement, you know, enjoying those benefits. We get to travel.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly it's just, you know, being there for our kids.
Yeah.
You know, simple as, you know, watching the babysitting for a couple of hours so they can do something, you know.
Sure.
You know, or just give them a break. It's just, you know, three kids, you know, they need a break.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and we're only not even 10 minutes away.
Right.
So, you know, we're close by. We can, you know, they give us a call. We can go over and say, oh, yeah, we'll watch them for a few hours. Go,
sure.
You know, go do whatever you got to do. No, just that and just the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just
happy, joyous, and free.
Just the freedom of just knowing that, you know, my life is good. It's beyond what. I honestly don't know about you, Johnny, but I didn't have any dreams when I was out there. I didn't have a single dream. Today, that's not the case.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things that, you know, we can, and we plan. We make a lot of plans, and sometimes they don't happen, and that's right. Okay.
Right.
You know, I've learned that, you know, we can plan.
Right, sure.
Without those expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, back then they were, you know, you said you're going to do something, didn't happen. That was another reason to drink.
Right, exactly. You know, exactly.
Just, those expectations aren't there. And that's just, that's that freedom.
Right. Well, and the freedom to realize that if what you were hoping to do doesn't come to fruition, you can be okay with it.
It's going to be okay.
You don't have to drink at it. You know, that sort of thing. The freedom to, and just the freedom to be able to wake up in the morning. I get on my knees. I ask God to, you know, my God of my non-understanding. I speak to this thing. I have no idea what it is, where it is, how it works. Just to get me through another day without hurting anybody. And then at night, just say thank you, you know, for getting through the day. And then I'll make mistakes, I get a chance to, make them right.
Yeah.
Not just say, I'm sorry. Cause that phrase doesn't work in my house
anymore. It's faded in my vocabulary. But yeah, I know just, every morning I take that first step.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an alcoholic. That's never going to change. It's just what I do about it.
Yeah.
And what my choice is that day.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm grateful that I'm able to make the correct choice.
Mm-hmm.
One more day.
Yep.
And that's all we have.
Right. One day at a time.
My sponsor told me earlier, there's no one has broken the record for 24 hours. Because there's only 24 hours in one day. No one's broken that record yet. So remember that. He told me that. Always remember that.
Yep. Well, Eddie, I want to thank you for coming in and spending this time with us and sharing your story. I relate to a lot of it. You know, just the thinking, just the stinking thinking. It seems to be constant with, you know, everyone I've ever met in this
people
program.
Like us.
Yeah. So thanks again. And, you know, we'll be seeing you around the block for sure. And I'm going to close off with my usual, you know, if you think you have a problem with alcohol or other drugs, you do.